You're listening to The Takeaway with John Hockenberry and Celeste Headlee.
Good morning, in for John Hockenberry on this last day of 2009. I'm Luke Burbank. A preliminary report is set to land on President Obama's desk today, attempting to detail how exactly a 23-year-old Nigerian with suspected terrorism ties managed to board a plane with explosives on Christmas Day. That file will also include recommendations on how to prevent future such events. However, Americans could be forgiven for feeling a certain sense of deja vu all over again. Billions of dollars have been spent since 9/11 to improve and try to stop just this kind of thing, improve security, that is, not to mention the myriad rules and regulations that, of course, we all face now when we get on the planes. So did we really learn anything from 9/11? Joining us with the details is Eric Lipton. He's a reporter for The New York Times. Hi, Eric.
Good morning.
Does this breakdown mean that a lot of these post-9/11 measures that were taken were essentially a waste of time?
I don't think it's that harsh. I think that that there's been a lot of progress, both in terms of the vetting of people before they get on before they approach an airport, and then the screening of them once they arrive there. But at the same time, the failure of imagination, the failure to connect the dots, the same phrases that we heard after 9/11, they're coming up again because the system has had a very similar type of failure. And so clearly all the problems have not been fixed.
What exactly did go wrong in this particular case then?
I mean, it's sort of two systems that try to protect aviation. The first has to do with vetting people before they even get to the airport, and the second is the screening them at the checkpoints. And appear to have been significant failures now in both of those areas. I mean, dating back to August of this year, there were hints that this young man should not have been allowed to board a plane for the United States. And then once he got to the airport in Amsterdam, there should have been a way to detect the explosive that he had on him.
As the days have gone by since Christmas, the White House has sort of gone from saying the system worked to saying mistakes were made to then eventually calling it a systemic failure. Let's hear President Obama on that.
The reviews I've ordered will surely tell us more. But what already is apparent is that there was a mix of human and systemic failures that contributed to this potential catastrophic breach of security.
Eric Lipton from The New York Times, who do you think gets the blame for these failures?
It appears as if the information that came in an intercept that occurred in August of this year, that there was apparently from Yemen, that there was a Nigerian man that was participating in a plot to attack, presumably an American target, was not connected then with the information that later came from the father of this young man, that he had gone to Yemen, and he was a Nigerian, and that he had radical ideas and perhaps in some sense of anti-American feelings. And there was a failure to connect those two critical pieces of information. And the job, the primary agency's job it is to do that would be either the Central Intelligence Agency or what's called the National Counterterrorism Center, which is the place that was created after 9/11 to pull the dots together. Those are the places that are probably under the spotlight the most right now.
Eric, hang on a second. Let's bring in Bob Ayers. He's an international security analyst. He had a 30-year career in the intelligence services, including the CIA and military intelligence, also the National Security Agency. Hi, Bob Ayers.
Hi, good morning.
You've worked across the board in intelligence. What do you think went wrong here? Human error? Is it something more systemic, as the president said?
Well, we're dealing with several problems here. One is that it's very easy to go back in retrospect and identify those bits of information that were actually valid and pointed to something happening. The problem that confronts most intelligence officers or intelligence analysts is not an absence of information, it's too much information. And so if you get 36 messages a day, for example, saying someone from somewhere is going to attack someplace else, which one is real, which one is not real, which one do you act on? It's very difficult to connect the dots, as everyone is saying. You can always connect the dots after the fact, but connecting the dots before the fact is tough. We knew there was going to be a Nigerian, at least rumored to be a Nigerian, perhaps involved in a plot, perhaps traveling to the U.S., perhaps traveling around this time of year. And what are you supposed to do with that? Are you supposed to put out an alert and prevent all citizens of Nigeria from traveling to the U.S.? Are you supposed to search every one of them, give them a full-body search? How do you deal with it when you get that sort of information? It's not clear, it's ambiguous, and it's not necessarily actionable.
Well, then, I mean, what should you do? I think you make a good point, obviously, that too much information is itself a problem, and yet what's the answer? Because we can't have people on planes with explosives on them.
No, I mean, we have a combination of things that are all at play when it comes to providing for airline security. There are technical attempts to provide for security, you know, screening your baggage, running your bags through an X-ray machine. These are not 100% secure. If you want to screen, for example, passengers, now this sounds a little silly, but to be perfectly safe, you should make everyone strip naked and then fluoroscope the body to make sure they have nothing inside of them. But of course, we can't do that because you have to balance privacy and human rights against the ability of technology to explore what they're carrying and what they have on their body. So we have a technical issue. We also have a privacy issue in that Americans and citizens around the world are very reluctant to have nation states build up massive databases on them that reflect who they are, where they live, what they think, who their friends are, who they talk to on the phone, who they talk to on the internet. People don't like that. And so there's a balance there as well. And then the other contributing factor is one that everyone is pointing to, which is the analytical community dropped the ball this time. They probably missed something that they shouldn't have missed, but that's what human beings do. They make mistakes.
We're talking to Bob Ayers, an international security expert, and also Eric Lipton, reporter for the New York Times. We get a lot of emails and voicemails on this show, and we received one yesterday, an email, where the person basically gave the impression that they just feel almost like everything after 9/11 in terms of the hassle that we've gone through and the money spent was for naught. I mean, can people be forgiven for sort of having that reaction, Bob Ayers? Or is that defeatist, I guess, in some way?
Well, we have to remember that the people that are terrorists, these are not, they're not stupid people. The image of an uneducated wild man with an AK-47 is not right. These are intelligent, they're educated, and they're very clever people. And when we develop some countermeasure to a technique, whether it's a shoe bomb or peroxide bombs, they will develop a countermeasure to that. They will come up with a new way to strike. And it goes back and forth, back and forth, back and forth. Now, the fact that we have not had any peroxide bombs or liquid bombs on aircraft, the fact that people have not smuggled in explosives in electronics gear like the Lockerbie flight, all of these point to some degree of success. However, the terrorists keep evolving. They come up with new ways that people hadn't anticipated. So for people that say we haven't learned anything, we've learned a lot because you're not seeing anything that's a repeat of something that had been seen before.
Bob Ayers, international security analyst, thank you so much. And also Eric Lipton, reporter for the New York Times, thanks to you for coming on The Takeaway today. My takeaway from this would just seem, Celeste, that it's always going to be something. You know, I'm going to be taking my shoes off for the rest of my life.
And you know, perhaps other
things,
articles of clothing.
That's right.
Yeah, absolutely.
As time goes by, it's 15 minutes after the hour. Let's get a check of the headlines.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.